I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Today, tension between values and history, specifically the legacy of Harry Curly Byrd. To many, the late president of the University of Maryland is a strong leader and outstanding athlete. To others, he's a racist, undeserving of his accolades. This week, the current president of the flagship campus recommended renaming the College Park football stadium bearing Byrd's name, saying his separate but equal stance conflicts with the university's mission. The Board of Regents is to vote Friday. Today on Midday, we'll discuss the accomplishments and segregationist values of Curly Byrd and whether wiping his name from the College Park campus would be a good move or political correctness run amok. That's Midday after this news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for being with us today, and thanks especially to listeners who have taken that extra step to support WYPR. Now, a quick update on the trial of Officer William Porter, the first of the six Baltimore police officers charged in the arrest and death of Freddie Gray. WYPR reporter Kenneth Burns tells us that Officer Porter has taken the stand in his defense this morning. The prosecution rested its case yesterday. Officer Porter testified that he did not call for medical attention for Freddie Gray because Gray did not give him a reason, and Porter didn't observe anything medically wrong with Gray. Officer Porter also testified that he did not put Gray in a seatbelt and that in his experience, he had been on the scene of 150 arrests involving a police van and never saw anyone seatbelted. He also claims that he was not aware of a policy change that occurred days before Gray's arrest, calling for all detainees to be seatbelted. Earlier this morning, the defense called as an expert witness Dr. Vincent DiMaio, a forensic pathologist and former chief medical examiner in San Antonio. He disputed the prosecution's timeline of when Freddie Gray was injured. Dr. DiMaio testified that Gray was likely injured between the fifth and the sixth stops. That's later than the state's theory of when the injury occurred, that Gray was injured between the second and fourth stops. Dr. DiMaio testified that Gray would not have been able to speak at the fourth stop if he already had been injured. Dr. DiMaio also testified that the local medical examiner should not have ruled Gray's death a homicide. He said it should have been labeled an accident. We get all that from WIPR reporter Kenneth Burns, who is in court this morning. He'll have an update on the Porter trial tonight during All Things Considered, so you'll want to tune in for that. This is Midday. I'm Sheila Cast, and now to focus on our main topic, a development in Maryland that parallels a discussion at universities across the country about race, about whether black students feel comfortable on their campuses, and about the duty of colleges to address racism in their history. As you know, if you've been watching the headlines, in late October, student activists at the University of Missouri demanded and got the resignation of the school's president, Tim Wolf, on grounds that he had failed to take action in disciplining students who showed racial insensitivity. Another example, at Princeton University, where Woodrow Wilson was president before he was elected governor of New Jersey and president of the United States a century ago, but students at Princeton point to Wilson's segregationist policies and want his name taken off Princeton's School of Public and International Affairs. In Maryland, this week, after months of protests from students, the president of the University of Maryland College Park, Wallace Lowe, recommended renaming the football stadium, which for years has carried the name of Harry Clifton Curly Byrd. Byrd played a big role in shaping the University of Maryland into what it is today, but he also enforced segregation and blocked black students from enrolling in Maryland's graduate programs until court rulings forced the issue. Late yesterday, I spoke with Bonnie Thornton Dill, dean of the University of Maryland's Art and Humanities School. In September, President Lowe named her to head the Byrd Stadium Naming Work Group, a group of 20 members of the faculty, staff, and student body. And I began by asking Dean Thornton Dill how the working group came to be.
Well, the background is that these issues were raised last spring, actually, by students. Both individual students and then the student government sent a recommendation about the change of the name forward to President Lowe. And this fall he appointed the work group.
And the task of this work group was what? To suggest a new name, to gather information? What was your mandate?
Our task was to thoughtfully and judiciously prepare a set of arguments for and against renaming the stadium, along with alternatives to be considered. So it was not to make a recommendation about whether to change the name or not, and it was not to suggest a new name.
Yeah, I understand that part of your mandate was to examine the history, and I'm wondering whether you can summarize what is most important for the public to understand about Curly Bird's presidency, which ran almost 20 years, from 1935 to 1954.
Right. And he was a senior administrator at the university before that, and then a football coach and many other things. So he was at the university almost 50 years. It's a complex history. He's undoubtedly, in many ways, the father and builder of the University of Maryland. He did move us from a small agricultural college to having the beginnings of a modern university. Yet for some, his name on the stadium is symbolic and a painful reminder that only a generation ago African Americans were denied admission to the university and were not permitted to play inside the stadium. And he was, in fact, one of the people in higher education in the state who was an active proponent and builder of separate but equal educational programming in the state.
So President Lowe also asked your group to examine societal context for where we are now. Mm-hmm. And again, what is important for the public to know?
Well, what we did was we started looking at how other institutions of higher education were handling requests for renaming of buildings, moving statuary, all of those kinds of things. And, of course, that's a context that between September when we started and December was changing almost daily.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking at, we started out with maybe 5 or 6 schools. We ended up with 10 or 12. We were looking both at the strategies they were using to address these issues, and then we were also looking at the educational kinds of initiatives that they were doing around them.
Is there a clear lesson from what's going on at other universities?
Well, I think we found some themes that are reflected in our alternatives. We found some appeals to values and changing values. We found some similar arguments that are reflected in both our arguments for and our arguments against. So it informed us in that way, and different institutions were doing different kinds of things, moving statuary to another location. But I think the bottom line of all of this was how we tell our story and how completely we tell our story and how much we embrace the things that are both negative and positive in the stories of our institutional histories.
Can you give me an example of a resolution that you think would do that and would be acceptable to both sides?
I don't know that any resolution will be acceptable to both sides. It's a very emotional issue for a lot of people. But I do think that the president presented some options in his recommendation that offer both a removal of the name of the stadium, and then he talks about memorializing Bird's contributions in the library and accounting for the full history.
That was Bonnie Thornton Dill, Dean of the University of Maryland's Arts and Humanities School. University of Maryland President Wallace Lowe named her to head the Bird Stadium Naming Work Group. I'm Sheila Cast. You're listening to Midday. To get a sense of how this issue of the name on the Bird Stadium is being discussed on the College Park campus, I'd like to talk to Andrew Dunn. He's a journalism and economics major who writes for the student newspaper, The Diamondback. Andrew Dunn, welcome to Midday.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
What has been the response of the student body to President Loh's recommendation that the Board of Regents take Curly Bird's name off the stadium?
The student response, I talked to a lot of students on campus, after the Monday letter was released, and it was fairly mixed from the sense I got. As Thornton Dill was saying there, it is a very emotional and complex issue on this campus. There are students who are, adamantly for changing the name. And then there's also this group that is, either doesn't really acknowledge or aware of the history surrounding Bird, or just wants to, uphold that legacy in the history of this university. So it was a fairly mixed reaction as far as students on campus go.
Am I right that the Diamondback at some point polled on this issue?
Yeah, we conducted, I'll qualify it as it was an online poll taken by about 1,200 people. So we can't be certain that they were all students or anything, but about 1,200 people
responded.
So
this was not a scientific sample. This was self-selected group who responded.
Exactly, which is important to keep into perspective on it. But it was an online poll put on the Diamondback site. And out of the 1,200 people or so that responded, It was nearly 90% said no to the name change. And this was in late September, at about the same time that Wallace Loh recommended the establishment of a work group to look at the issue.
So, and I realize you haven't had, I assume you have not had an opportunity to repeat that. From the time in September when President Loh appointed this work group until he made his recommendation, is it your sense that attitudes on campus have changed?
I would say that's a fair assessment, especially from the people I was talking to after Monday's letter. For a lot of students, I think Loh is still, an influential figure.
You said Loh mm-hmm. is still an influential figure. Loh is the current president. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, Loh holds a fair amount of clout among students, I think. And a lot of students I talked to, the email he sent to the campus was highly influential and sort of opened a lot of people's eyes that I talked to. As far as your average student, that's not really involved in these issues every day. I think that shapes a lot of opinions going forward on this issue.
Well, the reason I double-checked to make sure you were telling us about Loh's influence on campus is because I'm also curious as to how aware students are, or how much students and for that matter, faculty and now on campus care about Curly Bird. Is he a live memory or an icon on campus?
Right. I mean, I think it's a very interesting question, and I wish I had a more definitive answer to it too. But I can say that I think a lot of students go into the university just knowing Bird Stadium as Bird Stadium, not really knowing the history of Curly Bird or, what it stands for, what it means. I will say that the advocacy work and the activism these last two semesters have definitely brought more people into the conversation. And it's become a very polarized issue as far as very emotionally laden. And, when Thornton Dill was saying in that previous interview that, she didn't really see any solution that would be acceptable to both sides. I think that's a pretty apt summary as far as how far divided some people are on this issue.
We have just a half minute or so left, and you spoke to others besides students. Did you get more of a consensus in other people?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a consensus, but I did get some interesting perspectives, and two or three that I would highlight is Jack Scarbath, a former All-American quarterback for the Terrapins and former Board of Regents member as well. I talked with him, and he said, he would strongly put his voice out there for Dr. Bird, in his own words. And he actually helped lay the concrete for Bird Stadium in 1950 and threw the first touchdown pass there. So there's a lot of voices on this issue. Johnny Holiday, the longtime Maryland sports radio announcer, he was expressing to me that, you know, he thinks people might read into this stuff too much, and it's just a place you play at the end of the day. But then there's, you know, there's just a lot of voices on this, and it's become a very, you know, I think it's been difficult for a lot of people to either heroize or, you know, make Bird into a hero or a villain, when really, you know, he was a little bit of both at the same time by a lot of people's perspectives that I talked to.
Is what makes this such a challenging issue. Andrew Dunn, I really appreciate your sharing your reporting with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Andrew Dunn is a sophomore at the University of Maryland College Park. He writes for the Diamondback, the student newspaper. You can find links to some of his articles at our website, wypr.org. We're going to take a short break here on Midday. We'll continue our conversation about the proposed renaming of Byrd Stadium on the University of Maryland College Park campus with some more history about Byrd himself and with a conversation with the vocal student activist who advocated for the name change. And we hope to hear your thoughts, too. How would you advise the Board of Regents to vote on Friday? But first, we're in the first day of our end-of-the-year fund drive. Andy Bienstock is here to tell you how you can pledge. Andy? Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm really glad that you are listening. I don't in any way want to complicate your plans to make a donation to WYPR at the phone number that Andy just gave you, but I also want to invite you to be part of this conversation we're having about the proposed renaming of the University of Maryland College Park's Byrd Stadium. So if you have some thoughts about that, if you think that this is a good idea and want to tell us why, or if you think that you can't tell where this is leading and we ought to be cautious and not do this, either way, give us a call at 662-8780. 410-662-8780 is the number to talk on Midday, or maybe it's simpler. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org. In his letter to the Board of Regents recommending that the name Byrd be taken off Byrd Stadium at College Park, University of Maryland President Wallace Lowe warned against what he called presentism, judging yesterday's historical figures by today's values and ethics. Someone who can give us some insight into how things might have looked in Harry Clifton Byrd's day is the mayor of Byrd's hometown, Crisfield, Maryland, a small city of about 2,700 located in Somerset County on the Eastern Shore. And the mayor of Crisfield is joining us now by phone, Kim Lawson. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, Ms. Cast. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
So you want to see the name Byrd Stadium preserved. Tell us why.
The point that we raise of wanting to see Byrd Stadium preserved is in the context of history that involves the life of Curly Byrd. I understand the dialogue that goes on in both areas of this, but as a small hometown boy, Clifton Curly Byrd, born in 1889, grew up in the down neck, what is known as the marshlands of Crisfields, called Jenkins Creek. And it was his encounter working in the water and day-to-day activities in a small rural Eastern Shore community at the end of the 19th century that allowed him to develop a work ethic, as well as many of his social fibers and fabrics that he would carry throughout all of his life. To put it all in the context, it really takes us to do something that none of us are really capable of doing, and that is to put ourselves into his time and place. Eastern Shore of Maryland, specifically Somerset County, unfortunately, in retrospective history, is not a place of racial tolerance that was far and wide. It was a segregationist area. It's an area where, out of four candidates for the presidency of the United States in 1860, although Breckinridge and Bell each received about 1,300 and 1,200 votes, Abraham Lincoln received two votes, and that is with only Caucasian males, as we know. So the roots from which Curly Byrd, 25 years later, essentially about 30 years later, is born into is an area of extreme mindset of things that we all have tried to leave behind. However,
it's an interesting insight, Kim Lawson. But I mean, you're basically, if I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but if I'm understanding your point, you're saying that he was that Curly Bird was more open-minded than he may look to us in the past. He came out of a way of thinking that he actually was. I think you're implying less segregationist than you might have expected him to be. But is that good enough for him to be honored on today's College Park campus? Is that enough progress in thinking?
The answer to that lies in multiple ways of looking at it. And the reality of the fact is that will be a decision that the Board of Regents will make. And it will make that based on Chancellor Lowe's letter of recommendation. I will say that some of the things that have come to surface that concern me is there wasn't a lot of insight asked for in this select committee that has studied this for a number of months from any of the people from his hometown area. Curly Bird looms very small in many people's minds in this world that we live in today in light of his name being on Bird Stadium. It is looked upon in one channel right now, and that is particularly his views on segregation. And that's unfortunate in the fact that in today's modern internet era, that's how we judge someone. We do know that there's far broader reasons why that his name was probably originally put on the original football stadium and then transferred in 1950 to what became the precursor to the massive Bird Stadium that we have today. And that was conferred in 1950 by the Board of Regents based on his legacy and a time that it was there. Your question says, indeed, in light of what we know about his segregationist past and all that, should it be of such prominent importance? And the reality of the fact is that is an ongoing argument that will continue to be argued by everyone and becomes a volatile issue in what we are dealing with in today's light of Black Lives Matter and all things that involved the oppression of certain classes of people in our society. When it's put in that context, the answer is probably no. But in the context of what he meant to University of Maryland, his name on that stadium should symbolize something else. The first chancellor that grew this institution in a time of the Great Depression, in time of World War II, into one of the premier institutions in this country. And I don't doubt very much that didn't have a large a part about the fact of the impact of his dynamic personality and the like in the way of leading this institution, and probably why he was someone that was elevated to the position of the first chancellor of the University of Maryland.
That is Kim Lawson, the mayor of Curly Bird's hometown, Crisfield, Maryland, joining us by phone from the Eastern Shore here on Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. I'd like to pull somebody else into this conversation now, the student who organized and pressed this issue on the College Park campus, senior sociology major Colin Bird. Colin Bird, of course, no relation to Curly Bird, the namesake of the stadium. Colin Bird wrote an op-ed in The Sun titled, How About Daryl Hill Stadium? And we'll talk about that in a minute. Colin Bird, thanks for calling us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me, I have the impression that quite a few people at College Park really had sort of no idea about anything about Curly Bird, good or ill. How did you focus on this as a change that needed to be made?
Right. So you know, obviously, as you just noted, my full name is Colin Bird. Colin is in Colin Powell. Often say Bird is in Bird Stadium. Same spelling. No relation except perhaps the plantation. I say that jokingly, but also quite seriously, because when we think about the history of the United States of America and its relationship to the legacy, the unfortunate legacy of slavery, you know, there may be more to that story. But at any rate, I'm Mr. Black Student Union. I'm the chief lobbyist for the NAACP. Last year when we first raised this issue, I was the chairman of membership for the NAACP on our campus. And, having served in various leadership roles, including as a legislator in the Student Government Association, the associate director of the Nimbu Cultural Center, which is our black cultural center on campus, invited me to provide the keynote address for our annual Black History Month ceremony. And that was, of course, in February. And in preparing my remarks, one of the things that I was really cognizant of was not to have a speech that was sort of tied and trite, right? Not to talk about black history in a context that we've always heard it, right? Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King Jr., people like Frederick Douglass. While these individuals were important and perhaps central and most notable when you talk about the historical development of race relations in America, I think it's also important for us to sort of highlight the unsung heroes and make sure that when we celebrate Black History Month, we're not missing an opportunity to learn, right, instead of just, repeat some of the same stories. So that's when I kind of delved into the history of the University of Maryland, being a second-generation Terrapin, being an African-American. I wanted to delve into the history of the University of Maryland and study its relationship to the long struggles for civil rights in America. And that's when I learned, a lot of information about Perrin J. Mitchell, who was Maryland's first black congressman, who was the first black graduate student at Maryland, who was just actually honored last week in the form of a dedication ceremony. And ironically enough, I'm a sociology major, so of course that was a particularly important moment of pride for me.
Right,
as a senior.
Let me just clarify that the dedication ceremony was at the sociology building at the University of Maryland College Park, now bears Perrin Mitchell's name. I just wanted to make that connection.
I learned about people like Thurgood. We already knew Thurgood Marshall, but what people don't know is that prior to the case of Brown versus Board of Education, Mr. Marshall brought several, if I'm not mistaken, over five cases against the University of Maryland on behalf of various plaintiffs who were suing to get into the undergraduate program here, the graduate program here, a law school, the medical school, the nursing school. I mean, every school. This was when the University of Maryland was kind of all under one umbrella. Now, obviously, you have the University of Maryland College Park that's somewhat separate from some of the other ones. So you see an individual, I know, I can't remember the name, the individual on the other end of the line, the mayor of Crisfield.
I'll tell you.
One of the things that I think is important for us to reflect on is we're not talking about somebody from the 1700s. We're not talking about somebody from the 1800s, although he was born in the 1800s. We're talking about actions and statements that an individual was making at a time when people, white and black, of good conscience, were kind of coming around on this issue.
Okay.
And to be sued so many times and to continue to, quote-unquote, stand your ground on this issue of segregation, I think it really says something.
Okay. It's an interesting point. I want you and Kim Lawson to have a chance to discuss it. We need to take another break here. So I'm going to ask Kim Lawson, the mayor of Crisfield, to stay with us, and you, Colin Byrd, to stay with us. And our listeners, we hope we've got Derek Holding from Pikesville, and I hope he'll stick with us too, and others will call us. But right now, this is the end of our year pledge drive, the first day, and it's going to be a very short drive, just 2 days. So it's important that we hear right now from Andy Bienstock how to pledge. And this is Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We want to pick up our conversation now about the issues surrounding whether or not the name of Harry Curly Byrd should stay on the football stadium at College Park, where it has been for decades. We're talking with Kim Lawson, the mayor of Crisfield, Maryland, the hometown of Curly Byrd, and we're also speaking with Colin Byrd, no relation, a senior at the University of Maryland who has been a vocal advocate for renaming Byrd Stadium, taking the name Byrd off of it. I want to pick up and sort of amplify Kim Lawson on one of Colin Byrd's points. He was saying that in the time that Byrd was president of the University of Maryland, there were the thinking was changing. There were lawsuits. He could have come around at least a bit on this issue. Seems to be one of the points that Colin Byrd is making. And let me add this to that, too. Colin Byrd left the university presidency to run for governor. He ran against a progressive Republican, Theodore McKeldin, who won. So voters at the time did not choose Curly Byrd's segregationist policy. It was a big part of that campaign, I understand. So how does that factor into your argument that we should continue to honor Curly Byrd with a name on the stadium?
You know, it's amazing. History evolves over a year-to-year basis, and the chancellor of the University of Maryland, Curly Byrd, was between 1935 and 1954. He ran against Theodore McKeldin in 51 and lost. This is also 6 years post-World War II, when, under one of the greatest presidents of the United States, FDR, we still could not come to grips in this country without having segregated military units in the Army, without having one of the most prideful units that black Americans ever had, being Tuskegee Airmen, who are memorialized today. The advocate for them was the great Eleanor Roosevelt, but right in her own household, FDR chose not to make a lot of this issue because it was more important for him to pull the country along away, or the way he chose. Now, I didn't experience that. I was born in 1948. So what I garner and what I know about that is by reading the history of the facts. McKeldin had worked long in his early mayoral career at Baltimore in becoming very much an African-American or black American advocate and moving people into government. He becomes one of the more liberal ideas along the idea. Of course, the unfortunate part about Mr. Byrd was he didn't evolve, and that is a part of human nature. Part of what we talk about here is the evolution of ability to change, and part of what we talk about is history. And the reality is, I can be assured, although I have never lived and experienced minority discrimination, the reality of the fact is that Mr. Byrd does not exemplify in many of his aspects some of the things that we in 2015 would like to say are very important to us. But what he does do is he represents a large part of the history of asking the question, how did this institution evolve into the latter part of the 20th century and become what it became? And part of that is the evolution that allowed Mr. Byrd at the polls to be defeated in this state by a Republican candidate, because indeed his ideas were falling out of favor. But it doesn't negate the fact that historically, Clifton Curly Byrd, although his name is on a football stadium, was an integral part of the evolution of the University of Maryland.
I'd like to hear from some of the many folks who have called us. Derek in Pikesville, welcome to Midday.
For taking my call. I appreciate it. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay,
you can hear me.
Hear
your thoughts.
I tend to agree with the mayor of Crisville on a number of issues. I myself am African American, and I would like to caution the young man who is leading this protest. I think that our movement as a people, being defined by our protestations over history and the outcomes of history, tend to be somewhat unprofitable in terms of. The same resources, for instance, could be used in developing and innovating new and better institutions, so that we can have a direct influence over the conditions that prevail within our own communities. My questions are this: what are you protesting, and who are you appealing to? If you are appealing, if you are appealing to the powers that be, you're tending to take away from the real work that needs to be done in improving the conditions of the people.
Derek, I appreciate your questions. Let me ask Colin Bird to address them. Colin, did you hear Derek's questions to you?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I'm really frustrated, you know, by the question, because I think what underpins the question is an assumption that's actually false, which is that, you know, this is the only work that, you know, myself and other members of the Black community, particularly the NAACP and the Black Student Union on our campus, are advocating for change in relation to. You know, one of the other things that I brought up last week when there was the Art Sociology Building dedication after Parent J. Mitchell was, how are we living up to his legacy, not only by in terms of the sorts of symbols that we still honor today, but also in terms of economic inclusion. One of the things that I've also tried to raise is that President Lowe, none of his vice presidents, he has seven vice presidents, and none of his vice presidents are African-American. In fact, all of them are white, so you don't even have any sort of racial or ethnic minorities in his cabinet. And I think that does not probably bode well for the sort of conditions that this individual was so concerned about, and I appreciate his concern.
But
the other
thing
raising an issue with was that only 1% of the contracts that the university gives out today go to Black-owned businesses.
Hold on just a second, Colin. Let me ask Derek, if he's still with us, whether he was saying that, you know, we've lost Derek. It wasn't clear to me that Derek was saying that you don't have the bandwidth to focus on other things. I think he may have been saying the institution can only make so much change, and if you make this change, there may be other change that you're not going to make.
Yeah, no, and I'm not under the impression. A lot of people kind of read the headline on this story as, the president recommends renaming, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of times the media, you know, reaches for the low-hanging fruit. But the letter was actually quite nuanced, right? It not only talked about renaming, but one of the other things that I think Mr. Mayor Crisfield can appreciate is that one of the things that's going to be done is they're actually going to do more to sort of appreciate and educate the community on the legacy of Curly Bird, good and bad, by memorializing him. And doing a better job of archiving his sort of legacy within our main library, the same library. And this is the other thing I would point out is that people one of the other myths that kind of get put out about Curly Bird is that he was a racist, but he was a great president. But when we look at athletics in particular, the fact that he was barring African Americans for participation in intercollegiate athletics was actually one of the biggest mistakes that I think in retrospect we can say that any university would be making when you think about the overwhelming contribution. The other thing in terms of
Colin,
academics...
let me interrupt and we're down to just a couple minutes, and I want Kim Lawson to be able to answer that, and then I have one last quick question for you, Colin. Kim Lawson, is there something you'd like to say to address his point about Curly Bird as an athletic leader?
I think in this unbelievable age of information that's available to us all, Colin has devoted a large amount of appropriate time in his particular case to the studying of many of these issues at the University of Maryland campus, but is not a microcosm of what was going on throughout our country. Part of what makes Thurgood Marshall, Perrin Mitchell, Frederick Douglass, the dynamic leaders that they are, is the protagonist that becomes in the educational spectrum of talking about someone like Curly Bird. And to remove his name is to stop the dialogue from something just as important to what his importance was in the university structure. Whether it was, I'm a professional nurse by trade, one of the first African-American nurses from entering the school and having to be fought for her rights in that, it went across the entire spectrum. And it is not a pretty picture to paint, but it is a part of the history.
Kim Lawson, I really appreciate you being with us today on Midday. Colin Bird, senior at the University of Maryland, can you tell me in one sentence why you think the football stadium should be named for Daryl Hill?
Yeah, if you can run, you can catch, and you can tackle, you should not have to do so within the symbolic shadows of who would have hated you. And we think that this will help to preserve the history of racial segregation at the university and make sure that we're not honoring somebody on the wrong side, but in fact honoring somebody who was on the right side of that. Of course, Daryl Hill was Maryland's first black football player. He integrated college football in the South. And I think this is worth noting.
Thank you so much for your time. We're just going to be, we're flat out of time here. I'm really sorry. I really appreciate your joining us. Colin Bird is the senior at the University of Maryland who's really pushed this issue of renaming Bird Stadium. Kim Lawson is the mayor of Curly Bird's hometown, Crisfield, Maryland. I thank them both. I thank you for listening and be part of this conversation. We'll be back tomorrow when we welcome State Senator and mayoral candidate Catherine Pugh. But right now, we want to welcome you as the latest sustaining member of WIPR. Here is Andy Beanstock. What's the number?